Hello, Marian Pallister, Justice and Peace Commissioner for Argyll and the Isles Diocese, and Chair of Pax Christi Scotland here. I hope that you're able to lay down some memories this summer after so long in limbo. I found that happy events and sad ones blurred into a numb nothingness after March 2020, and however restricted we may still find ourselves, contact with loved ones now is such a blessing. On August the 9th, we will mark the UN's International Day of the World's Indigenous Peoples. And like me, you may not have given such people much of a thought during the pandemic, but there are 476 million of them living in 90 countries across the world, accounting for 6.2% of the global population. They're marginalised at the best of times, and during the pandemic, a set of different vulnerabilities have exposed Indigenous peoples to the serious effects of the crisis. We know that in our own society, COVID-19, the world's arch enemy, has lain bare and intensified existing inequalities. One of the saddest posts I've ever seen on Facebook was the picture of a piece of artwork created by a homeless person. On the wall of the bridge under which their makeshift bed lay, they had drawn a chest of drawers with a telly on top, a wee cupboard with a birdcage, and between, a window onto whatever previous world they may have inhabited, now existing only in their mind's eye. With furlough support ended, and the temporary extra £20 benefit to be withdrawn, the UK now has 14 million people, a fifth of the population, living in poverty. 4 million of these are more than 50% below the poverty line, and 1.5 million, like the person who created that heart-rending artwork, are destitute, unable to afford basic essentials. We've heard time and again of people in work, some of them are nurses and other frontline workers, having to access food parcels. But Indigenous populations all over the world are disproportionately affected because they were already suffering from poverty, illness, discrimination, institutional instability or financial insecurity. The social contract, that unwritten agreement the societies make to cooperate for social and economic benefits, doesn't stand a lot of us in good stead. So imagine if you live in a South American rainforest where land is being grabbed for oil or for industrial scale farming, and the country's government is encouraging the plundering of your traditional homelands, and with that, the rape of your culture, your language, the very means of your being able to stay alive. That's no social contract. Before we write off such people asking what they have to do with us, let's remember two things. One, Pope Francis's document Fratelli Tutti, which stresses that we're all brothers and sisters, and two, it could be that our great-great-grandparents, as Indigenous people of Scotland, went through similar onslaughts of their livelihoods, their culture, their language, the very culture, the very clothes that they were allowed to wear. We have a lot more in common than we might think. The Highland clearances, for whatever reasons the historians accept, saw people driven from their homes. In times of conflict after the 1715 Jacobite uprising, people were rounded up like cattle, forests were burned to the ground, and the Gaelic language prohibited. Fast forward through that century, when land was sold off to landlords from south of the border, determined to make their new estates pay, and we find families evicted so that more profitable sheep and later deer could take their place. Today, in Southeast Asia and South America, it's oil, minerals, and land on which to raise beef to feed the Northern Hemisphere's enormous appetite for red meat that's pushing indigenous peoples out of their homes, off their land, and away from the way of life of their ancestors. Garlic was proscribed by a government in London. Think of the struggle in the intervening centuries that we've had to revive and nurture the language of so many people in Scotland. Around the world today, at least 40% of our 7,000 languages are endangered. Next year we'll see the decade of indigenous languages begin, but every family pushed away from the river they've fished in for millennia by an aggressive Western company polluting the waters means a step away from a mother tongue. I once interviewed refugees from the Democratic Republic of Congo, driven out of their homeland by conflict. Every Sunday, they got together and sang their songs, danced their dances, spoke together in their own language and not the language of their host country, because only then could they be their true selves. Speaking in another language doesn't let you show your true personality, your true worth. Doesn't let you crack a joke and show how funny you are. It's why the village elder becomes the guy doing menial tasks or not having any work at all. Why more than 8 out of 10 indigenous people work in the informal economy and are 3 times more likely to be living in extreme poverty compared to their non-indigenous counterparts. The theme to this year's International Day of Indigenous Peoples is Leaving No One Behind, Indigenous Peoples and the Call for a New Social Contract. My feeling is that it should be called the Call for a Social Contract. You can't renew what isn't there. And when there is no social contract, people can be treated incredibly badly. On August the 29th, Pax Christi Scotland will hold a Zoom event to explore Clause 6 of the Treaty of the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons. That's the clause that seeks compensation for the victims of nuclear testing and reparation of lands damaged by nuclear testing. One of our speakers is Dr. Becky Alexis Martin, a lecturer in cultural and political geography at Manchester Metropolitan University, and she's got expertise in the cultural and social effects of nuclear warfare. She writes on the lives of nuclear test veteran families and the cultural and social significance of nuclear places and spaces. Before I asked her to speak at our event, I read her latest book, which is called Disarming Doomsday: The Human Impact of Nuclear Weapons Since Hiroshima. I was aware of the terrible consequences that nuclear testing had had on the people of the South Pacific, radiation sickness that continues to leave a legacy of cancers, malformed fetuses and early deaths, and the land and sea from which they lived polluted for the foreseeable future. What I didn't know till I read Becky's book was how badly the tests carried out in Australia had affected the indigenous people there, who were not even told why they were being shifted from their ancestral lands or that those lands continued to be affected by radiation when the tests were over. The Aboriginal sites of worship, traditional ceremonies, of meeting places, all were blighted by the aftermath of the tests of weapons of mass destruction, and the people themselves, of course, suffered radiation sickness. That lack of respect for Indigenous people, that marginalisation and discrimination that treats them as less than human, let alone as our brothers and sisters, has also been shown by another nuclear nation, as they're called, the French. to indigenous peoples in the deserts of North Africa, where some of their nuclear testing was done. A recent article in The Economist recalled that before a test on May 1, 1962, of a French atom bomb known cosily as Beryl, French officials in Algeria told people to leave their homes in the southern city of Tamanrasset, just as a precaution. The blast would be contained underground. But things didn't go as planned. The underground shaft at the blast site wasn't properly sealed. The mountain above the site cracked and black smoke spread everywhere. Radio particles leaked into the air, but no one told the local people of the dangers. And in the months and years after, they would go to the area to recover scrap metal from the blast for use in their own homes. Debris from other tests has apparently been buried in the Sahara, and the French refuse to say where. Indigenous tribes continue to be exposed to radiation as the sands shift, but the French, like the British, have refused to give compensation to victims of such fallout. Indigenous people have been and continue to be left behind. Left behind because their homes are swept from under them. Left behind because their lands have been used and abused for so many different reasons, but always to meet the needs of richer people or people intending to become rich on the treasures those lands encompass. In Fratelli Tutti, paragraphs 118 and 119, Pope Francis reminds us that the world exists for everyone because all of us were born with the same dignity. Differences of colour, religion, talent, place of birth or residence, and so many others cannot be used to justify the privileges of some over the rights of all. As a community, we have an obligation to ensure that every person lives with dignity and sufficient opportunities for his or her integral development. And the Holy Father quotes St. John Chrysostom, who said that not to share our wealth with the poor is to rob them and take away their livelihood. The riches we possess are not our own, but theirs as well. The saint would surely be horrified that we're robbing the poor to feed our greed for burgers, mobile phones, clothes that we buy today, chuck tomorrow, palm oil that keeps our favourite biscuits on the supermarket shelf a few weeks longer. It's estimated that for each pound of beef produced, 200 square feet of rainforest are destroyed. The cleared land can't be used for long because the soil soon becomes dry, and the cattle farmers then have to move on to create new cattle pastures, leaving a trail of destruction, and communities of indigenous people not even able to go back to the land they were ejected from. To meet our demands for minerals, oil and metals for our consumer society, poisonous chemicals such as mercury are used to separate the waste from the minerals. The chemicals end up in rivers, polluting water supplies which local people depend on, killing fish and affecting the river's ecosystem. A social contract? Ha! The UN says the new social contract must be based on genuine participation and partnership that fosters equal opportunities and respects the rights, dignity and freedoms of all. The indigenous people's right to participate in decision-making is a key component in achieving reconciliation between indigenous people and states. For God's sake, let's get it signed. And on August the 9th, International Day of the World's Indigenous Peoples, let us say Pope Francis's prayer to the Creator, which you'll find at the end of Fratelli Tutti, which says, Lord, Father of our human family, you created all human beings equal in dignity. Pour forth into our hearts a fraternal spirit and inspire in us a dream of renewed encounter, dialogue, justice, and peace. Move us to create healthier societies and a more dignified world, a world without hunger, poverty, violence, and war. May our hearts be open to all the peoples and nations of the earth. May we recognize the goodness and beauty that you have sown in each of us, and thus forge bonds of unity, common projects, and shared dreams. Amen. And I thank you for listening.